Look, down in the water.
It's a plant.
It's an animal.
It's a dinoflagellate.
Yes, it's dinoflagellates. Strange microbes with powers and abilities far beyond those of normal microbes. Dinoflagellates. The subject of Ken Gale's next episode of Ecologic. Tuesday, August 21st at 8 p.m. right here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org.
And this is WBAI New York at 99.5 FM. And it's 7 o'clock, which means, once again, it's time for Off the Hook. Good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Wednesday evening. Joined tonight by Rob T. Firefly.
Good evening.
Jim.
Hello.
And Bernie S. down in Pennsylvania, I believe.
Greetings from Pennsylvania.
Is it just me, or are we getting less and less people every week? Hasn't been this empty in a while. I like it. I'm not complaining. It's good to have some space.
If it'll help out, I can stretch out and take up two seats.
Look at me. I'm stretching right now. I'm not hitting anybody this time. It's incredible. Wow. Okay. Well, it's part of the August purge, I guess, where we just basically thin our ranks a little bit and see what we have in the fall. We have an interesting show tonight. There's a reason why some people aren't here, and we have other things to discuss and talk about. And of course, we are still recuperating from HOPE, the Hackers on Planet Earth conference that took place last month. Now, about a month ago, Bernie, are you pretty much recovered?
You know, not completely. It was a lot of work, but it was also very energizing. But in a way, you just sort of have to get back to a normal way of life, because it's as you know, it's months and years in the planning, and you just sort of get into this mode and mindset, and it takes a while to settle back into normal mode of life.
Yeah, I woke up in a cold sweat thinking that I had some planning to do, and it was a good 5 minutes before I realized, no, it's over. It's done. It's like that French test I keep waking up thinking I have to take tomorrow from high school. But it's fun. It's a lot more fun than that. And, I'm already looking forward to 2014, because this one just went really smoothly, and we've heard so many positive things about that. And, it keeps coming in. The reports keep coming in from various people as to just what they experienced at HOPE number 9. What we're doing tonight, we're going to talk about some other hacker events on the horizon. Some of them are looming on the horizon. There's two in particular that we're going to be focusing on tonight. First, though, I'd like to take a very quick look at some of the things that have been going on in the news. According to the ACLU, attorneys for Facebook and the American Civil Liberties Union, they both want a federal appeals court to rule, and this is about one of the silliest things I've said, but it probably is important anyway. They want a federal appeals court, anyone will do, to rule that clicking like on the social networking site is constitutionally protected free speech. I don't know. I guess the case basically revolves around six employees who were fired by Hampton Sheriff B.J. Roberts after they supported his reelection opponent in 2009. Where is this sheriff? I guess it's... any idea? They don't... These stories, this is from Newsday. They don't say what state. It's Hampton... Hampton, you know, Hampton is like in every state. It's like Washington or Lincoln.
It's somewhere they still have sheriffs who go by things like BJ.
Yeah, yeah. The workers sued, saying they should not have been fired and that their First Amendment rights were violated. U.S. District Judge Raymond Jackson ruled against them. The workers are appealing to the 4th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals in Richmond. And in that ruling, there was no dislike button to hit. And that's another problem, that there should have been a dislike button after that ruling. In fact, I think that's a good idea. Every time there's a Supreme Court ruling or an appeals court ruling, there should be like buttons that people, you know, journalists, politicians, regular people, we can click these buttons. In fact, why not just make everything like or dislike? You know, stop all the dialogue. Just yes or no. We can move on and do so many other things.
I think there's potential to this idea, but can we, like, arm the dislike buttons with something like a jolt of electricity attached to the politician in question?
I like that idea. All
do
right.
You? Excellent.
One of the workers liked the Facebook page of Robert's opponent. Jackson wrote that clicking the like button isn't a substantive statement that warrants First Amendment protection. I kind of agree with that, sort of. I see what he's saying, because it really is silly, but no way should you get fired for clicking a like button. I don't care what you're liking. You should be able to like whatever you want. That's what, you know, liking is all about.
Or perhaps they just shouldn't have been messing around with Facebook at work.
Yeah, that's the real issue here. Why were they clicking on Facebook at work? I assume it was at work, but... All right. And then, of course, we had what happened today. Of course, we know about that. We've all experienced the traffic. We know the city has been mired in gridlock and all kinds of alerts and things like that. And why? Because what was going on today in Times Square? There was the competition for the fastest texter in America, and that was taking place today in Times Square this afternoon. The winner got $50,000. I heard the results on the radio. They actually broke into a report on national security to tell us that the winner is the same winner as last year. And in fact, what he's doing is he's collecting $50,000 every year to pay for school, where hopefully he won't be texting all the time. But right now he is texting, and apparently he's quite good. The competition basically tested three skills: speed, accuracy, and dexterity. Fortunately, there was no category for just wasting time, period, because they would have lost that. There are three rounds: texting while blindfolded, texting while driving. No, I'm just kidding. Texting with hands behind their backs, and text blitz. Say that three times fast. Where phrases are shown to the contestants for a length of time, and they have to copy it as fast as they can before the next one. The competition is sponsored by cell phone maker LG Electronics. And I wish I knew the name. Actually, no, last year's champion, his name is Austin Wierschk. I couldn't text that if I saw the name. Wierschke. He came back today to defend his title, and my understanding, if that bulletin was correct, is that he succeeded in doing that, and he won another 50 grand. Competitors range in age from, Rob T. Firefly, I'm going to give you a guess here as to what the range in age for the texting championship is.
12 to 13.
Very good, but no. Nah, Bernie, you want to try?
Oh, I was going to guess a little wider range, from like 11 to 15.
Well, that's not bad either, but no, it's wrong. It's actually 16 to 24. I just find it hard to believe that nobody over the age of 24 even was competing in this. Maybe that's a sign of maturity, where you realize that some things are just too silly to waste your time on.
Perhaps they were all busy having substantive conversations with people.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, Bernie, go ahead.
Is it say anything in the article there about, in the story about... how long it took them to send a text, assuming it was like a full 160-character text message, how long it took them to type it out, tap it out?
I read the entire story. For more information, go to Twitter, where you can read another 140 characters, which I'm sure will give us all kinds of information. Okay, and speaking of Twitter, there was a threatening tweet. I don't know if you guys saw it go by, but it was a threatening tweet aimed at Mike Tyson's Broadway show. According to the NYPD, yesterday they said that Twitter had, this is kind of important actually, Twitter has complied with a subpoena and identified the user who threatened to attack a Broadway theater, and it was an attack based on the attack that happened last month in Colorado. Even people who threaten attacks don't have original ideas. They have to base it on a theme that was already presented. The Twitter user, whose name police did not release, threatened to open fire inside the Longacre Theater on Broadway, where boxer Mike Tyson's one-man show Undisputed Truth is playing. There's a picture here in this story of a cop with a machine gun standing outside the theater. That's a welcome sight for theatergoers, don't you think, to walk? Actually, there was one on either side of the entrance. Two policemen with machine guns greeting you as you walk into the theater. Oh, yes, the 21st century has arrived. This ain't no joke, yo. I'm serious. People are going to die like Aurora, the unidentified user tweeted last week. The post, of course, referring to the July 20th shooting in a movie theater in Aurora, Colorado, left 12 people dead and 58 injured. Reactions from theatergoers on Thursday were mixed. If someone makes a threat like that, I'd take it seriously, said Jay Pierre, who was visiting from Texas. Joe Munley, though, of Scranton, Pennsylvania, who used to spar with Tyson, brought his family to see the former heavyweight champion perform on Tuesday. He said it's total nonsense. It's probably somebody who doesn't like Mike. Check out the brains on this guy. Yeah, you know, it's probably not one of his admirers. I agree with you there. That's never would have thought of that. But the one thing that you do have to remember is that when these threats are made, usually when the lunatics strike, it's without warning. They don't say, I'm going to do this, and then they do it. That happens on TV. It doesn't happen in real life. Doesn't mean you shouldn't check it out, but I don't know if putting machine gun toting officers at the entrance to the theater is really the way to go.
But on the other hand, putting machine gun toting officers in front of the sort of people who would go to see a Mike Tyson one-man show is maybe a better idea than most.
Well, it definitely tied into to the one-man show idea. I think they should have put them on stage, you know, laugh or else. I assume there's a comedy. Well, no, maybe it's not a comedy. I laugh at the idea, but now I'm in trouble with Mike Tyson. Okay. Well, here's my question, though. The NYPD basically issued or was behind a subpoena that Twitter identified this user. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but you don't need to give your real information to Twitter. So what information could they possibly have gotten?
That's correct. Although I guess another thing they could probably get is your IP address and where you're connecting from.
That is true.
And any geographic data that was attached to your tweets, if your tweeting device has GPS capabilities and so on.
Assuming the person wasn't smart enough to use some kind of anonymizing technique and mask where they were coming from. Probably not.
The person picked a fight online with Mike Tyson, so they're maybe not very smart to begin with.
It's smarter than picking a fight with him in the street.
This is true.
Yeah. All right. We have to make our first telephone call, and we're actually going to be going over to Germany, and this dial tone is going to help get us there, I hope. I haven't dialed this in a while. We dial 9, right? No, we don't have to dial 9.
I don't think we do anymore.
All right, so I'm just going to start dialing the number. I'm going to turn down the audio so people can't hear what I'm dialing. And we're actually calling overseas right now. And let's see if that worked. Sometimes, because I can't hear the touch tone, sometimes it doesn't work. So, next thing you hear should be a phone ringing in Germany. That's what that is. We'll be speaking with someone named Fukami, I believe.
Hello.
Hello, is this Fukami?
Yeah, it's Fukami here.
Hi, how are you? This is Emmanuel from Off the Hook, and you're live on the radio in New York City.
Yeah, I'm in Hamburg, and it's like in the middle of the night.
I'm sorry for calling so late. Unfortunately, that's just the way the planet works, and if we want to talk to you live, we've got to call you in the middle of the night. But we have an important reason for calling, and that's the announcement that you guys made, the Chaos Communication Congress people. I made an announcement a couple of days ago that the annual Congress, which takes place on the 27th, 28th, 29th, and 30th of December every year, instead of happening in Berlin this year, is moving to Hamburg. Is that correct?
Yes, correct. The main reason is... we really like the BCC, which is a really, really great place, and they're really great people.
The BCC being the Berlin Congress Center, right?
Yeah, but the last we didn't have enough space for all the people who wanted to attend, and it was really a nightmare to get a ticket. It was not only like last year and also the years before, and we were really, really looking for a different spot in Berlin, but we didn't find anything which was like good enough for us or yeah, which just has these opportunities we need to have to revolve these this kind of event. So yeah.
Well, now, you guys have really, I guess it's not really a bad problem to have, but you have more and more people who want to go to the Chaos Congress, which is a huge hacker gathering. You have more and more people every year wanting to do that. So you had to implement basically advanced ticket sales that I think were sold out in a matter of seconds, and it just made it extremely hard, particularly for people coming from other countries, to actually get to the event. It got to the point where you guys were encouraging people to stay away.
Yeah, and that's really bad. I mean, like, all of those, like, all the hacker events are becoming bigger and bigger, and that's the same problem, like, for every kind of event existing for a long time. So we have, like, the 30th anniversary next year, and the main idea was to have that big party, and if you have, like, so many people, which kind of thing, it's like really, really bad. So it's bad for the community, it's bad for the event. And also, since we don't have much space there or don't have the possibilities to just move ahead and try new like things, new concepts on an event like the CCC, it was like kind of like dead end.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because when we first started using that building, the BCC building in Berlin, it seemed so big, I guess because not as many people were going, but every year more and more people. How many people were you able to fit comfortably in there?
Around 4,000.
4,000? Well, that's double what we get at the Hope conferences, so that's a fair number of people, but even that's not enough.
Yeah.
Wow,
so the new spot, it's really, really cool. I mean, you know the one before the BCC, the HAKP?
Before BCC, it was held in the former Communist Youth Center, right?
Yeah, true. And the new venue really reminds me on that. It's like really like a 70s style. It's like an old Congress Center. It's not like this brand new faceless building. It's really, really nice.
Wow.
And we have space for everyone. So I don't think that we will get into trouble like the next at least 5 years or 10 years or so.
Well, by that point, I can't imagine how many people will be showing up then. But can you give us an idea of what the capacity is, or have you not calculated that yet?
No, we are still like in some of the like discussions with the owners of this venue, what places we like really get. But altogether, it's like a place for like 20,000 people or so.
Did you say 20,000 people?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Since it's like a very nice building for like splitting it off into like different parts, I think we'll have enough space, even if we like calculate it's like 5,000 or so. That's what we think in the moment. But if there are 10,000, it doesn't matter, you know. And that's like a really, really big benefit for planning. So,
well,
okay.
it's also good, I think, to be mixing up a little bit. I know a bunch of people, myself included, actually, we've been going to CCC year after year, and it sort of was starting to feel like a routine. We're going to the same place year after year. And after a while, you know, this is why we don't have Hope every year. We don't want to do the same thing year after year. We want to do different things, go to different places. So I've heard from a number of people moving to Hamburg is actually a good thing in and of itself because it's a change of scenery. It's a different style. And this first Congress taking place in Hamburg is definitely going to be historic.
Yeah. That's one thing. I mean, like, we also don't know this place really. We just We've been there a couple of times, not just to watch it, but we don't know how it works. There are people. We don't know how it works to do anything there. So it's really very, very interesting just to explore possibilities on a new place. And we have like lots and lots of space, and that's what makes it so interesting.
Wow. Now, what kind of reaction have you gotten so far since making the announcement?
Most people are really glad that the ticket situation is like gone. That's the main thing. So that everybody's able to attend. And most people are really glad that there's a possibility to move forward. Yeah, with the whole idea of like having such an event where like the whole German and like European community comes together, or American friends and stuff, and we have possibilities, and that's something we didn't have for like the last 4 years or so, where nothing really happened, and so the people are really picking it up. A couple of people are a little bit sad that we are going to leave Berlin, but Hamburg is also really a nice town.
Just to put it in perspective for the American audience here, it's a major change in venue. It's going from one city to another, but if you take a high-speed train from Berlin to Hamburg, you get there in an hour and a half, I believe. Is that correct? So, you know, Long Island takes longer to get to New York. We don't have high-speed trains here, but wow. So it's not that – it's far away, but it's not that far away time-wise.
Yeah, but, I mean, it's a tiny country still. but Hamburg is a big city. It has a big harbor. It's a little bit like Seattle. So it's raining very often. But, it's like a nice town. It has like lots of cultural things, like lots of nice quarters and stuff like that.
Now, the conference will be running around the clock, I imagine, correct?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
And actually, the Congress started in Hamburg because the CCC, or the Celtic Computer Club, started in Hamburg. So the first event were at a place called Eichstätter Bürgerhaus. And the whole event moved to Berlin like at 15:03, so it's like 14 years ago. So the event is going back to its like origin.
Do you have any idea how many people used to go to the Chaos Congress when it was back in Hamburg?
200.
200, amazing. Yeah. Wow, and is the place still standing that it used to be held in?
Yeah, actually, every 2 years there's an event called Easter Hack, which is like during Easter, and every 2 years it's in Hamburg, or it was like the last, like every 2 years now that the Congress comes to Hamburg, we don't do that event anymore in Hamburg. But this house was still used for like some of our events.
Now, in the announcement, you guys basically described the new venue as sort of like a campground except inside. Is it really that big, and is it that flexible?
Actually, it is that big. And we are still thinking how to, you know, like, or like waiting for all fixed dates and stuff. Yeah, and places we get, so that we can really start with the planning. But it's like more a way to like thinking it for the next year, like for the 30th anniversary. It's like everybody knows what's really possible there, so we can like have a good anniversary. So this year is more like looking, testing. Just get used to this place. So, but the basic idea is to have a concept like we have in our camp. So it's very like, more like, more the concept of villages, more the idea of people having their own organization of like talks and stuff like that, so that we only provide the grounds, but not the program really. Like it's long run.
I see. Bernie, I know you're on the phone. Do you have any questions for Fukami in Germany?
Yes, Fukami. At the current rate of CCC attendance, how long will it take for CCC to completely book Hanover Fair?
Oh, boy.
Which holds about... That's where CBIT is held, and I think its capacity is 600,000. I think the
hacker community
can do that.
Where do they find space? Where do you find these massive venues? Wow.
Well, I've been to it several times, and I firmly believe that there are more than 600,000 hackers in the world that could book Hanover Fair completely.
And do you want them all in the same place at the same time?
I think it could be pretty interesting.
Oh, boy. So, Fukami, do you think it's going to get to that stage, half a million hackers?
I mean, it's possible. Why not?
Oh, boy.
All right, we're just extrapolating.
Like, not, like in the next, not 10 years maybe, but yeah. But if you really want to have such a big event, you have to do it in a completely different way. So in our terms, you do it like nobody gets paid, and stuff like that, and it's not possible to have an event that size with so many people without having like a completely different way of organizing it, and it's not possible to do it like with volunteers anymore. And even like with our event, we have like 4,000 people. Less than 10% of people who are now volunteering, and the whole event lives from that. So the move is also an idea to get that back, so that we don't do some sort of like event service, but have an event which is like self-organized and people do their own stuff, and we don't need to have like high ticket prices and stuff like that.
Right. Now, one of the greatest things about conferences are the ones. Hope is one of them, where so many people volunteer, so many people help out. So you really feel like you built it yourself. You helped to create a massive event, and that's something that the German conferences have traditionally been pretty strong with, at the Dutch conferences as well. So yeah, I'm hoping that there'll be a lot of self organizing and new things that we haven't even thought of yet that will spring up as a result of this. All right, Fukami, can you give us any contact info, people who want to submit talks or want to get involved in some way? How can they do so?
The easiest way to get to our weblog, which is like events.ccc.de, or follow us on Twitter at CCC.
Yeah, the Twitter ID of CCC, you have that?
Yeah.
Oh, awesome. Great. And the website events.ccc.de. And
there's a CFP, and there are all the details for submitting talks. And in the next few days, we will open up the public wiki. So it's like rolling already.
Yeah, well, you certainly have something to talk about now, which is pretty cool. But best of luck on the change of venue and going back to Hamburg. I think that'll definitely be interesting. Will there be any future events ever in Berlin, do you think?
Yeah, I think this event, which was in Hamburg before every 2 years, maybe is going to move to maybe going to move to Berlin, for example.
Okay.
I think I think it will happen.
Yeah, I do like the BCC. I do like that building. It's very convenient, but as you said, it's gotten too small and. Well, we have to keep moving on, and it's going to be it. We sort of face the same problem at the hotel. We haven't quite gotten there yet in New York. But people are talking about maybe we're outgrowing the place. Maybe we need to expand a bit. Fortunately, there are some hidden catacombs in the hotel that we can still expand to. But after that, yeah, it's going to be a problem. Growth can definitely be an issue.
One of the main discussions we had in advance was like, if we are going to a bigger place, it's not that private anymore. And I think it's the opposite. Because you have more space, it's becoming more private. Since if you are in like, for example, in BCC, you don't have like your own space anymore. Yeah, it's all, that there are all, always, there are people everywhere. So a bigger place makes it more like cozy and stuff, man.
Well, it's our hope that we'll get so big that we'll just take over Governor's Island. And that's about as private as you can get because you can't even get there by boat after dark. And Fukami, thank you so much for talking with us. And again, best of luck with everything. And we'll be updating people as the event draws closer. But the Chaos Communication Congress taking place this year and I guess from now on in Hamburg on the 27th, 28th, 29th, and 30th of December. And more information, go to events.ccc.de. And Fukami, I think we'll be in touch in the future to get more updates.
Okay, thanks, and goodbye.
Thanks. Have a good night, and sorry for calling so late. Interesting, huh?
It sounds like the event is really going through an interesting time, and I think it'll be doubly interesting for the people that have been going to sort of explore a different part of Germany and find a new, explore a new venue.
Yeah, and that makes it more interesting, too. That makes it, when we actually change the venue and go to a different place, it's like starting over again. And, you know, the CCC was great. The Congress was amazing. Every year was cool. But it was basically the same scene every time. And this changes it. This makes it different. And it's kind of like starting a conference in a new country. It's a new city in this particular case. But let's say somebody had a conference in, Croatia, Serbia, or someplace like that, and it happened the same time as the Congress happened. Well, I'd be kind of leaning towards going to the new place rather than the place I'd been to over and over again. But this makes it more interesting, and I'm much more likely to go because of that. And I think that probably speaks to a lot of people as well. It'd be fascinating to see. So why don't you guys banter for a moment while I try to reach some of our people. Instead of going to the east now, we're going to go to the west, where there's another event that's about to start, much closer than CCC.
Yes, indeed. Well, there was one thing I wanted to mention. It was actually Jim that brought this to our attention. Today is the fifth anniversary of the passing of Joy Bubbles, a.k.a. Joe and Grecia. Now, Joy Bubbles was one of the original phone freaks back in the 1960s. He was known for being a blind phone freak who had perfect pitch. He could whistle the blue box tones in order to exploit the phone system and do all the sorts of things that people were doing. He passed away on today's date in 2007 at the age of 58, and he lived a very interesting life, did Joy Bubbles. And he was just a heck of a guy. He was featured in Secrets of a Little Blue Box, which is the Esquire article that sort of blew up phone freaking into the public eye and caused a lot of people featured in it, people like Captain Crunch and so on, to suddenly deal with fame and notoriety. Ingressi was no exception. He did a lot of the phone freaking stuff in the 60s, got caught, got busted, and dropped out of the freaking scene, but he was always remembered and fondly remembered by people who spoke with him. And, it was an interesting film. I mean, I remember the at the Last Hope in 2008, we had one of our speaker rooms named Ingressia to memorialize him a little bit. I had the chance to speak with him on a freak teleconference at least 10 years ago, and he was still an interesting fella. Of course, by that time he had changed his name from Joe Ingressia to Joy Bubbles for reasons of his own. But he remains a prominent figure in our history, and I think he's a nice fellow to remember. There's actually being a documentary is being made about him as well. You can find that at joybubblesthemovie.com.
Do you know who's making it?
I don't know who's making it, but apparently it's in production. I was just directed toward this today.
How many years ago was it that he passed away?
It was 5 years.
Five years.
It was August
5 years
8th,
ago.
Wow. Yeah, 2007.
Boy, time flies.
That it does.
Feels like yesterday. Okay, well, rest in peace, Joy Bubbles, and your legacy will certainly live on. Joining us on the phone now, actually, are two of our correspondents. Kyle, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
I hear you just fine. And Mike, I believe you're there as well.
I am. How are you?
Okay, well, you have two different connections here, but actually the two of you are in the same place. You guys are on the way to tour camp, the second tour camp, an outdoor camp taking place in Washington State. I believe it starts tomorrow. Are you guys there yet? Are you on the way? Where are you?
We're on the way.
One at a time, please.
Yeah, we're on the way. Maybe another hour or two till we get there, driving through Northwest Washington State.
Yeah, we're just on the last set of highways. We made our turns. We've got to our ferry and made our way out to Bainbridge Island, and we're sort of near Discovery Bay now. So
you realize that means nothing to the people listening in New York, but basically you say Seattle. People here seem to think Seattle is on the Pacific Ocean, which it's not. Heading.
It's actually it's got a huge sound of its own that. Is navigable by big ships, and there's many islands within the center of it. And to get out to the coast, you have to get out to the Olympic Mountain Range and then drive past that mountain range, and then you're on the coast.
So how long is the trip heading west from Seattle to get to where you're going?
I think we have maybe like 100 more miles, maybe less. I haven't really been keeping track. I do know that the total trip, including the ferry from Seattle out to the venue for this hacker camp, is about 176 miles, I think, is what the maps thing calculated.
Wow. That's amazing. That's so much further than I thought was possible to go west from Seattle. So tell us something about the camp. What's planned? What's it going to be like? Either one of you. Just not both of you, either one.
It's hard to say because there is, it hasn't started yet, but there's a lot of workshops planned, some of which I've been looking at. There's going to be apparently someone who will be implanting RFID chips into people who want that. So that's a little bit frightening.
What kind of people want that? Now, who wants that?
I don't know. I guess we'll find out.
Yeah, really.
We actually on the ferry on the way here, we ran into Mitch Altman and Jimmy, and they're going to be doing the hardware hacking thing that they just travel all around doing.
Mitch Altman just happened to be on the same ferry that you were on.
Yeah, yeah.
What are the odds of that? Well, I guess the odds are pretty strong if the conference is starting tomorrow.
Yeah, there's one ferry an hour, so maybe one in 24 are the odds. But Jimmy has something called Latitude. I don't really know what that is, but apparently it lets you know where people are. It lets you stalk people, like, en masse. And he describes this sort of westward migration of all the latitudes, whatever they're called.
I'm afraid you're going to have to explain that a little bit more. He can see where people are with this?
Yeah, I don't really know how it works. I probably don't want to know.
All people or just people that are embedded with something?
I believe it's people who have some Google product that, and then they let him see where they are.
Ah, sheep.
So
okay, yeah.
It sounds like Foursquare or something, where except everybody's moving and you can follow their movements. That sounds really neat. One other thing I wanted to mention was there's going to be a cooking competition. They're going to have a competition at tour camp where basically a bunch of people get basic ingredients. And they have to do some amazing stuff with – it's like a challenge, like a competition. So they have to make a lemonade, so to speak, out of whatever kind of food they are chosen to work with. And so that is going to be a lot of fun. That's something I haven't seen before.
So it's kind of like what the French chef meets MacGyver or something like that.
Yeah.
Cool. Are you partaking in that? Because you're a pretty good cook.
You know, I was really conflicted. I was trying to bring all kinds of kitchen stuff, but I think I'm going to be just barbecuing and doing my own cooking thing, but I definitely, I don't know, I would sign up. Maybe I'll have what it takes. I did bring a little secret spice cabinet with me, so we'll see. Maybe if I get involved, I'll be a contender.
Now, are any talks that pique your curiosity?
Oh, wow. I've barely had a chance to really look through all of them, but there's definitely some interesting stuff with vehicle computing and that kind of hardware hacking. And gosh, there's a couple different ones that stand out. There's one on IMI that I'm really interested in. That's the Icelandic journalism haven that they're creating in Iceland.
Yeah,
talking about
we've talked about this. In recent episodes, we've been talking about the possibility of establishing that as a journalistic haven. I know, Mike, you've been interested in that as well.
Yeah, I'll be really excited to learn more about it. I know we had a representative from that at Hope, but I didn't have really much chance to speak to him, so we'll get to learn more here at TorCamp.
Cool. Now, it runs from when to when? You guys know the schedule?
The 8th through the 12th, I believe.
Okay, so it starts, well, today's the 8th, right? So it started already.
Right. Today's move-in, and I think they're having a bit of festivities tonight, just sort of everybody getting settled and maybe a bit of a meal, everybody camping and stuff for the first time.
Now, the first tour camp took place in eastern Washington State, which, to the surprise of many people, particularly Jason Scott, I'll never forget his surprise and perplexing expression when he discovered that there was a desert environment in Washington State. And that's where it took place, on the site of an old missile silo. But this is in western Washington State, and it's completely different. Kyle, can you explain what the environment is like over there?
Yeah, I can, actually. It's much different. Eastern Washington is very desert-like, as you said, and in fact, that area where we were camping had a particular geologically significant past where there just happened to be volcanic ash there based on an eruption. I believe it had something to do with St. Helens, but I'm not exactly sure. So people looked into that after tour camp, and I think the general idea is people wanted less sand and dust storms and stuff like that. So what happened this time, I think they went out and staked out a really beautiful place that's along the coast, that's on the Pacific Ocean, and it's in the north western tip of it's like the most northwest tip of the continental U.S., right across the Strait of Juan de Fuca from Canada. And it's basically the lowlands. There's a little bit of a beach, and then it sort of becomes forest, and that interfaces with Olympic Mountain Range, which also has alpine forest and rainforest. There's a fair amount of walking trails. So it's not the typical kind of beach you would imagine way down in California or something that's just bare and sandy. You maybe have a little bit of beach, and then it immediately becomes sort of low forest and rainforest. And then the Olympic Mountain Range extends up, and there's glaciers and all kinds of interesting hiking up there. But we're going to be down at sort of the sea level, right on the beach near the Pacific Ocean.
That's incredible. And, yeah, it sounds like you're at the very northwestern tip. In fact, you're probably pretty close to Canada, right?
Absolutely, yeah. In fact, some of the projects had to get the, okay, and, they had to get sort of permitting, and, there was all kinds of logistics to set up some of the projects that they're going to have out there, including a demonstration, cell phone network and all of that, some lighting spectacles and different interesting stuff. So, yeah, Canada's very close by, and surely they'll be happy to see us enjoying ourselves.
Well, they might complain about the noise and ask you to turn it down after a certain time. They like to do that up there. But Mike, now, is this your first time in this particular part of the country, and what are your impressions so far?
Yeah, well, I mean, I had been to Seattle once before, but never to wherever I am now. And I've only been here, of course, for a little while, mostly on the road. But it's very green and very damp, and I'm looking forward to seeing more of this, especially after the summer we've been having in New York.
Mm-hmm.
It's very cool. It's a good temperature, although we did see some blue skies, and it was sunny yesterday and stuff. It sort of burns off towards the end of the day, the clouds, and we're going to see more of that, like, dynamic sort of weather where it's cloudy in the morning when we get further to the coast. But it's definitely been, like, low 70s and not very humid. It's a bit damp out. Like, I think it rained a bit, but it's good, cool weather, so a good day for a drive.
So this has been a heck of a journey. Like, how long have you guys been traveling altogether?
We left today.
And have any particular hijinks ensued or things that we should know about that happened on a road trip between Mike and Kyle?
You know, we're still only halfway there, so if one of us kills the other, we'll let you know about it on the next
Okay, so you've still got time for a madcap adventure or
yeah,
two.
Well, Kyle's the one driving, so keep that in mind.
we did all right. We got to the ferry a little too late for the one that we wanted, so we waited in Seattle for a little bit. But it was nice. It was low-key getting the ferry. I think we left around 2 o'clock from Seattle, so we're not even barely... yeah, like halfway there, as Mike had said. So.
Well, you got the Mitch ferry, though, so it worked out.
Yeah.
Definitely. And will you be racing Mitch on the highway now to the campsite?
Well, we're delayed because we're talking to you. So.
Oh, well, no, actually, I know Kyle can catch up, and this is what's called a handicap, so that actually you're evening it out.
Yeah, well, we
don't
get first on to the ferry, so we're actually ahead of them when we stop.
Okay.
So maybe if they pass us, we'll be right behind them.
Now, Kyle, you mentioned a lighting spectacle, and I know that there is something involving Hackerbot Labs, the Seattle hackerspace, and lasers. And whenever that happens, authorities go on high alert. But these guys, and you're part of it, you're planning something rather special, aren't you?
We're doing an installation that we actually got a grant from TourCamp to do an art installation. And as far as I know, it's going forward. And basically, there's a 24,000 milliwatt laser array that we're mounting on top of a yurt. And it's going
What is a yurt? What is a
beam 4,000 feet into space.
Can you tell us what a yurt is for the sake of listeners?
It's sort of like it's like a Mongolian tent,
uh-huh.
That kind of style, a movable living space that's sort of round.
I slept in one of those when I was in Mongolia, in fact.
Resort.
Yeah, they're really cool.
Yeah, and one of the members has one, and we're basically going to be using that as a safe zone for this lighting installation that we got an art grant from TourCamp for. So it's really exciting that they supported HBL, and the laser is very interesting the way it's being cooled and stuff. It's not using any sort of toxic gas. It's using some different, sort of cheap refrigeration technologies. And I don't know, it'll be a really beautiful display, and everything will glow because it's a 450-nanometer blue laser light. So.
Now, you told me this yesterday on Off the Wall, actually, that you had to get permission from the FAA, the Federal Aviation Administration, and they gave you some facts and figures, and the hackerspace, Hackerbot Labs, actually wound up correcting those figures. Is that accurate?
Yeah, it was definitely the figures that were wrong, and basically they corrected the formula that the FAA uses to calculate beam projections. In instances like this.
Oh boy!
I don't know the exact story or the numbers. I wasn't involved with the filing of the paperwork.
I know the FAA doesn't like being corrected, so hopefully they won't be offended by that.
Yeah, well, it was a calculation that they'd been using. The formula had been in use since 1994, so they were way off for quite some time.
Oh no!
Hopefully nobody got hurt, but we've since been able to help them with their formula, and I think at first it was. You know, they were alarmed and thought our calculations were wrong, but we had checked our math, and apparently it was their formula that was basically allowing for unsafe beam distance, or it was making a safe beam sound much more dangerous than, or like it would go much further than it would, or at a higher power than is ideal. So
always check your math.
And I'm going to be helping just on the ground by being a spotter and making sure no planes or birds get in the way, or trees.
So you're like the kid when you're playing street hockey that says car when there's a car coming, except you'll be saying plane.
Yeah, and I'll get a big stop button that I can turn it off. And, you know, we're always looking up at space and with all this curiosity stuff, so definitely I'm suited for the job, and that's basically what I'm going to do. And I can't wait to see everybody. I can't wait to see all the excitement and good fun that's probably going to be ahead of us here at TourCamp.
Yeah, I would just ask you to double-check the numbers and make sure you're not aiming that thing directly at Mars, because we've just left something rather expensive there, and I'd like you guys to not blow it up.
Although if you did blow up something
definitely.
On Mars,
well,
that would be...
I'll double check. I'll ask them when they're getting the lenses out and stuff. So we'll make sure not to disrupt any of that progress.
Now, Bernie, you're on the phone as well. Do you have any questions for our two travelers here?
Well, I was just looking at the tourcamp.org website about all the talks that are going on there. I wish I could go there. I'm just tied up here in Pennsylvania.
How do you spell tourcamp.org, Bernie?
It's T as in tango, OORCAMP.org.
Okay.
Not TOUR, as some people might think it's.
Yeah, I wonder where that goes.
I haven't checked. I hope they registered that, too. But in any case, it looks like a really great outdoor hacker camp conference. They're doing one of the things I was curious about is their internet connectivity. My guess is the only way they're going to be able to do that is by satellite. Is that right?
There have been a number of rumors, but no one in the position to confirm or deny any of them. So we're as curious as anyone as to if there will be internet, and if so, how.
Well, there will always be some good human networking, I'm sure.
Well, I mean, every hacker conference ever has had internet, so I'm sure there's a plan.
Other stuff, so we're going to have to wait and see. So it's exciting, though.
Yeah, it must be. But, any other questions, Bernie?
I'm just looking at the HackerBot Labs photonic beam art project. This is 24 1-to-2-watt blue lasers, 22 dozen powerful lasers. A 1-watt laser for our listeners is capable of like lighting a cigarette. So 24 of them, and they're going to combine them into this massive column. I really wish I could be there to see this. It should be awesome.
You might not have to go there to see it. You might be able to see it from where you are, from what I'm hearing.
There's still time, Bernie.
Yeah, there is still time. I guess,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, fly tomorrow morning, you'll make it.
Okay.
It lasts until Sunday, so sure, why not? Especially if you're in the western part of the country to start with. Go to tourcamp.org, and all the details should be there.
Oh, and Kyle, make sure there are no bats that fly into the beam, okay?
Oh, yeah, I'll work on my bat calls, and I'll make sure that they steer clear. That's good. Part of my job as a spotter, and I think it'll work out.
You see, it sounds like he's kidding, but I think he really does know bat calls. But, Bernie, it sounds like you're speaking from experience. Is there something that happens if you aim a laser at a bat?
If you aimed 24 1-to-2-watt lasers at them, I'm sure they would die rapidly. They'd probably be cooked in midair. Now, bats are wonderful creatures. They eat lots of insects, and they're a declining species in North America, or some of the bat population. So they're worth preserving. And my guess is they'll see the beam, even though they're half blind. They'll probably steer away from the light. They don't like the light, so that's a good thing.
All right. Well, I'm glad we're concerned about the bats and all the other wildlife out there. On that subject, I guess, Kyle, you'd know the answer to this. What kind of wildlife are you guys going to experience out there? Are there bears, for instance?
That's a good question. These are some of the things you are that you ought to worry about when you're packing, instead of, you know, which album you want to listen to or that kind of thing. So yeah, I've looked into it a little bit. There is various kinds of elk and definitely bugs are something to be concerned about. Bears, I don't think are going to be as big a problem. Especially out on the coast there near this resort. But I think people will be taking precautions. Like
Sasquatch, really? Team. No. How do you prepare to meet an elk?
Get your elk procedure manual out. I don't know. You very carefully allow the elk to go about munching whatever he's, you know, munching, and you do your thing and don't be disruptive. I don't know.
It's like between a deer and a moose, right? It was an elk. It's like somewhere in between. Okay, we've discussed pretty much everything on this program.
Deer.
Uh-huh. All right, well, listen, I want to let you guys continue on the road. Any closing thoughts that you'd like to leave our listeners with?
Oh, well, we'll have to let you know. We're not going to have mobile phone service, but when we get online, we'll report back that we made a safe trip, and we're just really pleased to have been able to stop off and give you guys an update on our progress, and we're just really hopeful that people check out these kinds of events and experience them themselves. They're really cool, especially to see in the U.S. So
absolutely.
We'll let you know how it goes.
Okay, please do. And great talking to both you and Mike. Mike, any final words from you?
No, just one thing. This is totally not in the spirit of final words, but Kyle did remind me that there's supposed to be a custom-built GSM network at this camp, so that will be exciting as well.
Well, yeah, he mentioned that, you're not going
to
have mobile phone service, so as a GSM.
I guess we'll have our own only. I don't know. We'll find out.
Yeah. All right. Well, it sounds like a lot of questions will be answered in the days ahead. So best of luck to both of you, and we'll be hearing back.
Yeah. We'll see you next week.
Okay. So long. And I guess we have time to take some phone calls. Actually, we have very little time. Let's take maybe one or two phone calls at 212-209-2900. If you haven't already dialed the number, it's probably too late. We have a couple of people calling in right now, so let's take a phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. But speak up quickly.
iHeartRadio annoying.
Rebel, so good to hear your voice again. That was pleasant, wasn't it? Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Oh, you too. Wow, I haven't heard that sound in a while. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Hey, what's up, Emmanuel?
How you doing? What's on your mind?
This is Burnt Kid James Bond. Long time no talk. I met you a bunch of times at 2600 meets back in the days, and also at Hope. I just wanted to tell you a little more about what lines are, what provides dial tone and what doesn't provide dial tone, because there was a discussion about that last week, if you're interested. If not, it's cool, too.
Well, can you do it in 30 seconds?
Yeah, sure. It's perfectly fine.
And turn on the radio, too.
I don't have my radio on right now.
Okay, then tell that person to stop talking. It was in the background. And you have 25 seconds, please make it fast.
All right. POTS, plain old telephones.
Yes.
Central office provides dial tone. PRIs, CAS trunks, et cetera. VoIP. PBX basically provides the dial tone, so it's a computer-emulated dial tone.
Okay, well, that's helpful information, and good hearing from you, and I hope things have gone well in the year since you spoke to us last. See if we can fit one more call in. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Speak up or hold your peace. Okay, let's try this one. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead, very quickly.
You are a true American patriot in every sense of the word. I was at your home.
Well, I hope you mean that in the good way.
Fantastic.
Yeah, you say you were at the conference?
Yes.
Great.
I was at the Hope Conference, and I got to meet you, Bernie S., a lot of other great people. One thing, I've been using Tor for years now.
Mm-hmm.
I found out about it through your show, and I don't know if anybody else has noticed this, but when I come out with an exit node from Canada, I can get all kinds of information about what's going on in our government here that you can't get if you just do Google through a regular connection.
In Interesting.
I don't know if anybody else has run into that.
Well, people are nodding their heads, so I imagine so. Unfortunately, we don't have time to go into it right now, but please, if you have a chance, write to us with further details, oth@2600.com, and we'd love to talk about that some more.
And we'd still like to get your reports from Hope if you were there and you haven't gotten in touch with us. Let us know what your experiences were like. If you posted photos, blog posts, anything, send us a link. We'd love to take a look at that.
Yeah, if you want to send something directly to the Hope people, pictures or anything like that, hope@hope.net is the address for that. Our address here at the radio station, oth@2600.com. Going to go out with, speaking of patriots, these are true patriots as well. You might have heard about this in international news, about this band in Russia called Pussy Riot. They basically made a music video inside a church criticizing Vladimir Putin. They're in prison. They're facing long prison terms just for expressing themselves. This is what true courage sounds like. Good night.
Восставшая колонна по инспекции кабинета строится окна, суки, суд за красными стенами. Райз объявляет побор системе! Атака на рассвете, не стану возражать за нашу свободу, хлыстом карать. Святая Мадонна научит нас драться, феминистского проведение пришло время подрывного столкновения. Старая сук таксического режима просит прощения от феминистского клина.
Ужаси!
Тарифа протеста!
Ужаси!
Путин достал!
Ужаси!
Мы существуем!
Ужаси!
Рают, рают!
Выйди на улицу! Живи на красной! Покажи свободу! Гражданской власти!
WBAI, New York, 99.5 FM.